I'm going to start off with an Imre Kodesh. The Imre Kodesh is a tremendous sefer written by the Strelitzker Rebbe. Strelitzker Rebbe says the machlokes between Moshe Rabbeinu and Korach was the same as between Rashi and Tosfos. That Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu were Rashi and Tosfos. Each one worked l'shem shamayim. Now normally they don't say that. They normally say that Korach was the other way around. That Korach Vadasa was not the right. Korach Pirkei Avos was not a good machlokes. But the Chassidim go on and say that it's Rashi and Tosfos. Each based themselves in the Torah itself. They each had a point that they wanted to get across. This is a machlokes. When you have a machlokes like this, you have to understand each side. So let's go through Moshe Rabbeinu's side. Let's go through Korach's side. Let's try and understand what happened. When the Jews were at Har Sinai, very few things went wrong. I mean, let's think. Once they were there, barely anything wrong. I know the first thing that people will say, well, what do you mean? Har Sinai was the ego. The ego is all. It couldn't be much worse than that. I mean, obviously it's something bad. But Moshe davened for them with Mesiris Nefesh. Very few people from Bnei Yisrael died of the ego. Sure, there was the Arab Rav, but very few Jews died during the ego itself. He spent 40 days and nights davening without eating or drinking, davening with Mesiris Nefesh to make sure that nobody would die. And granted, there were some people that died, but that was it. It was something that should have destroyed the entire nation. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to save them. After the ego azov, after they saw what Moshe Rabbeinu did, when he broke the glucose in front of them, went up to daven for 40 days, brought another pair of glucose down on Yom Kippur, and told Bnei Yisrael, today's the day of Kapara, they loved him so tremendously that if anybody would have said anything bad about Moshe Rabbeinu, if anybody would have said anything against what Moshe Rabbeinu said, he would have immediately been killed. There would have been no question. He would have been killed immediately. So Korach didn't say anything. Even though Korach had his complaints and his issues, from the very, very beginning, when he wasn't made Kohen Gadol, when he wasn't made head of the Levim, when he saw that he wasn't given a high position, he wanted to complain, but he knew that nobody would listen to him and that he'd be killed. So he didn't say a thing, he didn't do anything at all. But when the people started to complain, they were traveling throughout the desert, there were the Mizonanim, there was the Isabu Taiba, all these people started to complain, and then it was Elgad and Medad came out, and Elgad and Medad said that Moshe is going to die and Yoshua is going to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Now that happened, and the Meraglim came with all of its ramifications, with everything that happened with the Meraglim, in which they knew that they were going to be killed and they weren't going to go into Eretz Yisrael, now the people became a little bit bitter. Just a little bit bitter. Enough for Korach to make a Pesach, to make a doorway for an opening for him to be able to get in, had a perfect opportunity to rouse them up and get them all going. Maybe not even your children are going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Listen, you thought you were going to Eretz Yisrael, look at you, you're all going to die over the next 40 years. Forget about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did daven for them that they would only die at the age of 60. Forget about the fact that they were all supposed to die right then at that moment, and Moshe Rabbeinu davened to be able to delay their death for quite a bit. Forget about all that. Korach said, listen, when Moshe Rabbeinu is around, you guys are going to die. So who says that your kids are going to go to Eretz Yisrael? It was the perfect opportunity.
Why was stopping for them not to die right away a good thing? Maybe if they die right away, then their children could have gone right in.
Anybody would know. We don't know that for sure. They didn't know that for sure. But anybody would get, if given the chance, die now or die later, they'll take the chance. Remember, there's a famous Tosas, Baba Basra, I believe it's Kuf Chaf Aleph. I didn't look it up. But famous Tosas, Kuf Chaf Aleph. You saw it?
Yeah.
15,100 people died per year over every one of the 40 years. You'd have to do the math for me. If it's 600,000 people that died and each one of them died per year, it's something like 15,100 per year over the 40 years. The 40th year, the last 15,000 never died. They went down. That's the whole idea of Tubav, right? Tubav is on Tish B'Av. They went to their grave. They didn't die. Yud B'Av, they didn't die. Yud Al finally hit Tubav. They realized, oh my gosh, we're not going to die. And they were unbelievably happy. They made it into a Simcha, and that became the holiday of Tubav. That became their holiday. If that's true, that means that the last 15,000 didn't die. That means that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was delay it because who knows what's going to happen. 15,000 of them survived because of that. So that's why I would say that it's better for them to at least have a chance to do something later. Yeah.
So the whole generation that was in the Midbar, that started off in the Midbar, years 1 and 2 or whatever, they all died, correct?
Yes.
So
except for those 15,000. Yeah.
Right, except for those 15,000. So if everybody would have died right then there wouldn't have been any children to go to.
No, there were children. There were people under the age of 20. There just wouldn't have been
one.
Yeah, they're all fine. Under 20. Right, you plus had the people over 60, plus you would have had the woman. None of the women died. Not a single woman died throughout the Midbar, according to the Miam Lois. He still would have had a lot of people. It just wouldn't have been as great, it wouldn't have been as tremendous. The Caduceus Lady explains the difference between this one and the next. I refer you back to 3 years ago, where I spoke of this out in a different way completely, but the way the Caduceus Lady, I think this year, the way I understand it is the following. There are two generations. There's Dor Midbar, and the Dor HaNechnasim La'aretz. Dor HaMidbar was literally based on Dibor. Moshe Rabbeinu's power was in his mouth. That was what Bilam asked. Where is Moshe Rabbeinu's power? They said in his mouth. To which he said that we got to find somebody who curses them. I'm sorry, Balak found that out. So we have to find someone who will curse them. And that's why they went searching for Bilam. They understood that that's what Dor HaMidbar stood for. That he was that. Dor HaNichnasim. Yoshua's generation was based on Asiya. They were based on doing something and making something happen. He had to do something to fight his enemies. Granted, Yericho was a little bit different, but everything that Yoshua did was he fought wars. He did it naturally, even when he did it by a Amalek. He fought naturally. That was the whole idea of the Meraglim last week. The Meraglim all came about because they thought Yoshua is going to bring us in. It has to be natural. So let's bring in Meraglim. That's the difference. Korach claimed if Moshe Rabbeinu only works based on Dibor, based on speech, then he has no shaykhus to our upcoming wars. Because he felt that since Moshe made Yoshua Matnes, that meant that Dor HaMidbar, the Dibor, was going to stop. And it was going to be a new type of generation of Asiya, and it was going to be a little bit different. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu has nothing to do with this world of Asiya, where things happen. He can just be in a world where there's just Dibor, where he speaks out things, and that's what ends up happening. Said Sakharish Baruch Hu said, Midik Neged Mida. Okay, you don't think Moshe Rabbeinu cannot affect things directly in this world when he does that? You're a piece of garbage, Korach. Here we go. Midik Neged Mida. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to make the ground open up and swallow you up. So that it's something in the land itself. And that's the idea, that his Korach causes things to happen in the land, which was something that Korach was denying. That he didn't have the ability to do things inside this world itself. So who's going to answer up the answer, the times of Korach? It seems that Moshe Rabbeinu really didn't have much to do with this world, especially after what he gave Klal Yisrael, man that didn't taste like anything, the Anani Akav, unless you thought about something, the Anani Akav, things that were supernatural, spiritual, things that weren't physical. So what's the answer to these levels of Korach? Nedarim, Lamed Tesim Abayis, says that the sun went up to the Shamayim called Zavul, and it said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you do the din for Ben Amram, if you fight for Ben Amram, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then I'm going to shine onto the world. And if you don't, then I refuse to shine, and I'm going to stop giving my light to all of the people in the world. Two things. Number one, what's the sun saying? Like the sun is a choice? The sun's going to have a choice whether to shine or not? Because Baruch Hu just look at it and be, shine. Period. I don't want to hear anything else from you. Well, since when does the sun have a word in this? Like the sun all of a sudden is like, oh man, I hate this with Moshe Rabbeinu. Is he watching it on TV? Like, what does the sun have anything to do with anything? That's number one. Number two, what's he calling him Ben Amram for? That's weird. Ben Amram is not the right way. Call him Moshe. Ben Amram is like an insult. He doesn't even have a name of his own. He's just the son of Amram. The guy is 81 years old. He just took down on a giant cause, Kriyas Yamsuk. He's the greatest man who has ever lived. He speaks directly to God. He might be shaykh to be calling him by his first name. You might be able to say that he's cautious enough on his own. What are you calling him Ben Amram for? Such a strange thing. Chassam Sofer says, we all know that a flame cannot exist without a candle or some type of candelabra to be able to hold it. A flame won't exist without something there. You can't just make a flame and hold it in the middle of the air. You can't do something like that. I mean, unless you're a magician. There's no way to be able to do such a thing. The only way for it to happen is if you have some type of menorah that's there. But what happens if the light goes out? Light goes out, you just get another candle and you just light it up and everything's all good, right? That's not the same. Granted, it's the same candelabra and everything's the same on the bottom, but the light is different. And sometimes that light might be a little bit weaker. If it's a candle and you lit the candle once and then you have to light the candle again, sometimes it might be a lot weaker. There might not be as much oil, there might not be as much wax. It might not have the exact same type of light as it was beforehand. It's just not as good as the first time. The Bnei Yisrael is the menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu is the flame. The Chachamim, Talmid Chachamim, are known as the flame on top of the menorah. Now, granted, the menorah itself is necessary for the flame to exist. There's no question about that. You need a nation, and you need normal people, in order for the great Talmid Chacham to exist on top. Otherwise, the Talmid Chacham really doesn't mean anything. The world's not going to be made for one Talmid Chacham with no other person in it. There's got to be people there, there's got to be a candelabra for the flame to exist. But it would be ludicrous for the people to say that the only important part of this world is the candelabra, is us, and the Talmid Chacham doesn't matter. And if one Talmid Chacham dies, we'll just get another one. That's ludicrous. It's never the same. It never becomes the same thing. Who knows if you'll even have a match to light up the next candle? You would never get rid of the flame unless you absolutely know there's something equal there, and you'll never know if there's something equal. That's why it's always a fact. Whenever a tzaddik or a gadol ador, whenever somebody passed away, even if they, well, there's somebody waiting in the ranks, there's always somebody else. Don't worry, there's somebody else there. It's never the same. I'm sure they were saying at the end of when, back in the mid 1700s, when the Gra passed away, who's going to take over for the Gra and for the Baal Shem Tov? Who's like the Gra and the Baal Shem Tov? And then later on, as time went on, who's going to take over for, go through the Briska Rav? Who's going to take over for the Chazan Ish? Who's going to take over by the times of the Chassam Sofer? Who's going to be this guy? Who's going to take over after Reb Aaron Cutler, after Reb Moshe Feinstein? But there's always someone, and then Chas Hashem that will ever have to say that who's going to take over after Rabbi Yasser. You should have a refuah shleim and everything should be all good, even though, listen, he's 101. You know, let the guy rest, right? Let the guy rest. No, you have no idea what you're asking for. You have no idea how much co-op Rabbi Yasser has as he is 101 in the hospital unconscious. It's still better than the alternative. Whatever the alternative is, it's still better than the alternative. That's the concept. It's not that you can just lose one tzaddik and gain another one. Whatever tzaddik you have, there's a reason why you have them. Daven for him to be around. They assumed that Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness was because of them. We had crowns on Har Sinai. We lost them because we made a mistake, and they all went to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness is only because of us. They assumed that they were the light and he was the candelabra. Or, even more ridiculous, that the important part of a menorah is the candelabra and the lights don't really matter whatsoever. And that's ridiculous. Thus they called him Ben Amram. Ben Amram means the son of a very high nation. Not of his father. They called him Ben Amram because they were trying to say he's a nobody. He only got all his stuff from us. We're the ones who gave him all this. That's the reason why he's so kadosh. So he's that. So the son was trying to knock out the tainas of Bnei Yisrael. If you're going to do a din for Ben Amram, what he's trying to say is, if you really think, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you're going to make Bnei Yisrael think that he's just a Ben Amram, that it's just because of the people that Moshe Rabbeinu is so great, you're going to let them kill Moshe Rabbeinu and bring somebody else and take over for him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not going to shine for such people. That's not what I want. And that's what it means by the sun. What's the sun? We all know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the sun, the Yoshua's moon. That's what it's supposed to be. He was the one that shone forth in the nation. He's the light. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu is being called this. And to show the nation that he's the light. He's the one that's shining. That's the concept of what it is. That also may be explained why. You all know that they suspected him of being together with their wives. Long thing behind it. According to this machlokas, the Kli Yakar says the reason why is because they all thought that he had gaiva. And when a person has gaiva, then it means you're automatically going to falter in Eishes Ish. You're going to sleep together with a married woman. That's an automatic. A person who has tremendous gaiva will be together with another woman. That's what the Kli Yakar says. And therefore, if Moshe Rabbeinu was so great, it must be used together with other women. That's the Kli Yakar. There are others. The Or Chaim HaKadosh says that all the kids that were born right around that time looked like Moshe Rabbeinu. And why? Because all the wives, when they were together with their husbands, thought to themselves, we want a child that's like Moshe Rabbeinu. In his greatness. Not necessarily his looks. I have no idea what Moshe Rabbeinu looked like. I mean, I've seen the Ten Commandments, but I have no idea what he really looked like. I'd assume he was a good-looking guy. But they didn't care about that. I'm sorry? Right, yeah. That's my definition. Like, he was just tremendously dreamboaty. Either way, regardless, I have no idea, but the kids that were born all seem to be that way. They all seem to be born like Moshe Rabbeinu. So the husband's like, what's going on here? No, it's ridiculous. Moshe Rabbeinu is living in an old moed. No one's ever seen him leave. He's not even going home. Let alone being together with other women. You can't be together with other women in Machane Levi'ah. It's impossible. It's us, or I should say, to be together. And he never left. It's not like people are seeing him walk away at night. People are with him all the time, learning Torah with him. The guy slept for what, 20 minutes a night? I mean, it's ridiculous. There's nothing to talk about. And yet, they suspected him. Why? It's because of this. They didn't think that he really was together with a married woman. It's that Moshe Rabbeinu was a mekabel. There's two jobs in this world. And I'm going to be a little bit graphic, but you have to be. There's an ish and there's an isha. An ish is mashpia, gives of something to another. An isha is a mekabel. That means he accepts, and she's a receptacle in order to grab something from another person. Okay, that's the concept of ish and Isha. Here is the idea and here is the concept. Moshe Rabbeinu was not an Ish. That's what they said. He was not a Mashpia. He's not giving up his Kedusha to others. Instead, he's receiving his Kedusha from the nation. That their crowns that they had at Arsinai were given over to him. So he's just an Isha. He's an Ishes, a wife of an Ish. Who's the Ish? B'nai Yisrael. They assumed they were the Mashpiyim. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Mekabel. He's the woman. They are the man. And they were 100% wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu was 100% the Mashpia, and they were the Makabal. But that's what it means by Ashes Ish. They claimed that he was together with an Ashes Ish. That's what it meant, that he was a Makabal and not a Mashpia. Yes?
Would you say that the idea of when you have such a thing of a Kedusha that you also have the same level of Toma too? That Kedusha and Toma?
Not within you. You have the possibility of it, but not within you. But yes, there has to be something. What are you referring to?
That we see him as having so much producer, so maybe there's possible
Torah. That's the Kliyakar, in which whenever there's Gaiva, there has to be Ashishish. So they assumed that it was going to be one and the same. But what you're referring to is the pasuk called Asvelu Mazeh Asalokim, the pasuk in Mishle, that God makes everything opposite. Whenever there's Kedusha, there has to be an equivalent amount of Tumah. It's no... Who is the guy? Who is the famous atheist who just passed away?
Hitchens.
Okay, anyway, he died right around the same time Rav Nachman Tzvi Finkel passed away. It's no coincidence that when you lose somebody like Rav Nachman Tzvi Finkel, you also lose somebody in Tuma. The same way that Avraham Avinu died. Who died in the same day as Avraham Avinu?
Nimrod.
Nimrod passed away the same day. Remember? Yaakov Avinu was making lentils and Esav ran in because he was so tired from murdering somebody. Who'd he murder? Nimrod. When Avraham Avinu is gone, Nimrod has to die. When Yaakov Avinu dies, who dies on the same day? I know it's strange because it wasn't really buried. When Yaakov Avinu was buried, who died on the same day? Esav. That's the idea behind it. There's questions when Paro died. Paro, when exactly Paro's tumah went away. But there's concepts. As Delamazah Esalokim, where Moshe Rabbeinu had Har Sinai, you know, Bilam had his own Har Sinai for tumah. He spent 50 days learning a different type of tumah, so he came up with his own Matan Torah of Kabbalah's tumah on the Hare Choshech with Shem Chazay and Azoyel. Of course, that's not Mechumash. That's just a measure. That's fine. Bilam had his own Matan Torah. He had his own Matan Torah of tumah. And he came down and he was something along that. I'm sorry?
Moshe died Bilam died?
We have no idea when Bilam died, but it would make sense that Bilam died at the exact same time. That they were equals in every way, shape, or form. Although we do know that Bilam died when Silya ben Dun went up against them. It may have been a couple months before him. Maybe a couple months before Bilam. It doesn't have to be exact. It doesn't have to be on the same day. It's just it usually is on the same day. Usually it's around the same time. That's the concept behind him.
Well,
I'm sorry? Yeah, that's what I said. It was a couple months before. It would have been about, I don't remember when the war. Oh, that's right. War of Midian was either 2 or 3 months after Sichon, which should have been, Sichon was on Rosh Hashanah, so it must have been Kislev time, and Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. So we're talking about 3-4 months. Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't have to be on the same day as long as it's somewhat close. So what was Korach's real problem? Why did he think that he was really greater than Moshe? And did he really honestly think, and all of a sudden, Korach being swallowed up by the ground, then everybody was like, oh, that's it, got it. Now we believe in you, Moshe. I mean, that's cool as anything. That's got to be the most awesome thing in the world to be looking at, and then all of a sudden the ground swallows them up. You notice that the Gemara said, that the Pasuk says, Nasu Lekolam, when they heard it, they ran away. They're scared out of their minds. I mean, I've never seen the ground open up in front of me. Thank God I've never been involved in an earthquake, and I've definitely never heard it talk. You know, there's a Tosis Yom Tif in Pirkei Avos that says the ground talked as it swallowed them up, and it said to them, I don't know what it sounded like. I'm swallowing, I assume this is what the ground sounds like. I'm swallowing you up because you argued on Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you're like, what the, are you kidding me? And you compared it to the Piyah Stone, it's a donkey talk, and the Piyah Be'er, the Be'er talked as well, Anu Be'er, and, I forgot the Be'er. Something Be'er Enula in Parshas Chukas. It talked. So the Piyah Aretz must also have talked. That's what the Tosfos Yom Tov says. That's later. That's the B'nai Korach, Lo Mesu. So they sing that as they were going around. That's from the Rabbah Bar Brachana Gemaras in Palavasa. That's a different issue. This is something different where it talks in front of everybody and everybody's freaked out by it because they never heard the world, you know, the earth talk before, and its voice is really crazy. I mean, I would assume. So what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, what happened to Korach? What happened to him? I have a Dvar Torah. I wish I could have given, if I would have had enough time this week, I would have given the whole shiur on this, because I have three different Pirushim that really explain this well. Instead, I'm just going to give one of them. I spoke about this 7 years ago. I looked up my notes. I think it was 7 or 8 years ago. Tufshin something. It's in a stomach somewhere. But here's the shot. You might have been there somewhere. But either way, regardless, Korach had Gaiva because he was tremendously rich. Where did he get these riches from? He had taken the key, he was the key bearer for Yosef HaTzadik's treasures in Mitzrayim. How he became the key bearer, so you asked me before, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know what he did, I have no idea how it happened. It doesn't make any sense that he became the key bearer, that he was the guy who was holding the keys. But he was. He was the key bearer. He's the one that was holding onto it. He had all the riches of Yosef HaTzadik. Now here's the pshat, guys. Yosef HaTzadik took the money from every person that came down to Mitzrayim to go buy grain. Anybody who came by to go buy grain, he took the money from them. Why would he do that? Because every nation in the world has Kedusha. And when every nation in the world came down to go give money to Yosef HaTzadik in order to get food, Yosef HaTzadik was able to pull some of the Kedusha away from all those people. And when they collected all the money, he took that Kedusha and put it on the money. You've heard about the dollar by the Lubavitcher Rebbe? Heard about those dollars Lubavitcher Rebbe uses? That's the pshat. The pshat behind the dollar is that he takes his own something and he places it on the dollar. And he takes his Kedusha and puts it on. That's what Yosef HaTzadik did to the coins. The coins that he had were Kedusha coins. They were coins that he placed that Kedusha on them and then he put them inside his treasury. They were full of Kedusha. Unbelievable amounts of Kedusha from the whole world around there. That's the idea of what it was. So therefore, the more money you had, the greater you are. The greater a person you are. That's how Bnei Yisrael were able to get all the riches from Mitzrayim. That's why they wanted to take out all the riches, because taking all the riches meant you took all the Kedusha out, because all the Kedusha was inside the coins. And that's how they became so holy so quickly that they immediately were able to go to Har Sinai, because they got a tremendous amount of Kedusha. Who is the one person who didn't take any money? There's only one person.
Moshe
Rabbeinu. Now you got into where I was going with this. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take any money. Why didn't he take any money? What was he busy doing? On the last day when everybody else was borrowing money, he was getting Atmos Yosef. What's pshat? Why was he getting Yosef's body and what did that mean? Korach looked at it and said, here's his pshat. He's less kadosh than everyone else. Anyone who even has a drop of Yosef's money is greater than anyone who doesn't. Granted, he did a chesed, but that chesed is not enough. That chesed is not good enough. You want real kedusha. You want kedusha to enter inside you. The way to get the kedusha is through the coins that Yosef HaTzadik collected, where he put that kedusha on. And if you have coins, then you're that. Who has the most coins? Me. I'm the richest person out there. Therefore, I am the greatest person alive. Now, there was a ridiculousness to Korach's claim, and there was a truth to Korach's claim. Ridiculousness part. Moshe Rabbeinu was even greater. He got to keep the leftover broken pieces from the luchos that he carved out. Now right there, the sapphire that he used to be able to carve that out had a tremendous amount of Kedusha because it was prescribed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So right there he had a lot of Kedusha in and of himself. It's not like he's sitting in the poorhouse asking for alms in the street. That's not what he's doing, holding that sign that says, need work, want work, you know? That's not what he's doing. He's obviously not doing that. But there's a real side to the claim as well. What's the real side to the claim? When a person does a chesed for another person, he takes on the Kedusha of that person. He allows that, let's say, his dead body, the dead body that's there, since he was only buried due to that, to whatever, Reuven, who went ahead and buried him, he gives over whatever he can to Reuven, and says, if there's a Gilgul Neshama almost, an Iber Neshama, a Neshama that goes in to Reuven from the body that had just passed away. That's the concept of a mace mitzvah, why it's such a huge mitzvah. You take on all the Kedusha from that person. Korach didn't believe in that. He said, no, the Kedusha is in the coins and that's it. That's all it is. There's nothing more to it.
He didn't have...
He was a bad person?
Yeah.
That's what happened to Esav and Nimrod. That's how you become more tummy.
The person who buried him, he would get his
become more tummy. That's what Esav did with Nimrod. Esav became more tummy after being together with Nimrod. A tremendous question. That's exactly what happens. So it's the opposite by Kedusha. Korach denied it. He said it's better to collect the money than it is to collect the body. So what are you wasting your time with the body for? Moshe Rabbeinu, you should have gotten the money. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're being ridiculous. Obviously, the person who is that man that collected all the Kedusha is greater than all of those other people combined. Therefore, you have to go collect the body, bury him, and that's even greater. So now, Mita connected Mita again. Korach didn't deserve to be buried. If you think there's nothing to going and doing a chesed by burying somebody, he himself didn't deserve to be buried. But how is that going to happen? If Korach would have died right there in front of everybody, you think none of the Jews would have gone and buried him? Of course they would have gone and buried him. They're all Jews. Of course they would have done that. So he had to be swallowed up by the ground. He had to be swallowed up and lost so that nobody would be able to bury him. And that's Dustin Abiram's problem as well. Now you should know, it's machlok is what exactly happened to Korach. In this week's parsha, it doesn't say a thing about what happened to Korach. It's really unbelievable. Not a word about anything that happened to Korach. It says, at the very, very end of the day, when everything happened, it says, after, before the Magepha, they all did, we all know what ended up happening with they did the 250 pieces, and then it says like this, Batiftach Aretz Piyah, the land opened up its mouth, Batiftach it swallowed up them and their houses, is referring to them, Dothan and Aviram, and their houses, that's Kol Adam Asher LeKorach, and all the men that were by Korach, but it doesn't say Korach, that's Kol Rechush and all their money. And then it says, the Holy where is it? The Eshav to Meitz Hashem Batokol as the Chamishim Omzayim Ish. And then it swallowed up the 250 men. The fire that went out. It doesn't say anything about Korach. So what happened to Korach? I had a long chat for a long time in which Korach never died. Korach, like Om Ben Pelas, did Shuvah at the end of his life, and he never died. I was wrong. You know why I was wrong? Because I'm an idiot and I just don't know Chumash. See, here's the foolish part. You can't make your own pshatim until you know Chumash Bel Peh. The reason why is because if it's not here, it's elsewhere. And when you see an obvious idea like that, and you're like, oh my gosh, Korach never died. There's no way he died. Then somebody will tell you, have you ever seen Parshas Pinchas? It's only a couple weeks after Korach. So you'd think that somebody had seen it. If you've ever seen Parshas Pinchas, then you may have seen Pasuk Tes and Pasuk Yud, Perach Avav Pasuk Yud. Batiftach Aretz Es Piyah, Batibla O Son, and it swallowed up them, the Es Korach. And Korach, the Mosa Ada Ba'achua Eshes Chamisha Masayim Ish, when the Ada was consumed, but the 250 people were consumed with the fire of Yulin Es, and it became a huge thing for Bnei Yisrael. So that's how you don't read Chumash. That's a bad. Yes, Daniel, very quickly. What do you got?
If all the possessions from bad people are considered tummy, and then anybody who takes them, wouldn't they be tummy also?
Yes.
Well, then, how did the Jews raise to such a high level after they took the Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim's?
Because whose money really was it? Yosef. How was it Yosef's money? What did he do to Mitzrayim? You're asking good, but think, what did he do to Mitzrayim?
He collected all the stuff and then got
it. Not just collected?
It was really his.
Why? Why was it all his? Why does all the Mitzrayim belong to Yosef?
He gave it back to them.
But what was the deal? The deal was?
He owned
every single one of them. So Yosef the Tzaddik owned everything. He claimed to his paros, but he's the one who did the Kenyan. He owned every mitzvah, which meant he owned all the money. When he died, he left it to his kids. Yerusha goes down to the kids. So it was Jewish money the whole time. It may be in the hands of non-Jews, but it was Jewish money the whole time. That's crazy stuff. Some of it. The gold that they had that they used for the Hegel itself was mostly the Erev Rav, which were the people that came along with Bnei Yisrael who never gave their money over to the Jews. They kept it themselves. They were the ones who threw it in, and there were some evil people, 600 people. We don't know where those 600 Jews got their money, but who knows? 600 Jews and 1.2 million Erev Rav were the ones who donated the gold for the Hegel itself. Yes, Dave?
If you ask Tara at the time when Yosef was working for him or under him, Paro would have said, no, that's my money.
Right. But he never made a Kenyan on it. And because he didn't make a Kenyan.
He didn't make a Kenyan. You can have a Shaliah, and Yosef was a Shaliah.
Yosef made this on his own. He decided on his own, and he did it. Now, granted, it's a Tos Akum. Paro thought it was all his. Tos Akum is still Mutter. So he fooled Paro into thinking that it's really his, when really he put it on himself, and he put it on his own shoulders, and he took it on, and he allowed it to be that way. That's the really crazy part. I'm going to end off with one thing. I'm going to skip most of this over here. I'm just going to tell you one little thing, okay? 250 people died by the Aish. Do not think for a second that they were as bad as Korach. They were not. They were Nesim who had something. Korach had Gaiva. Korach was into trying to be in charge. Dustin and Abiram were just, we all know how big of losers they were their entire lives. We know that. We know that from the beginning. There's no question about those 250 people that they were evil. There's no question about Korach that Korach was evil. The 250 men were not. Here's the difference. Originally, Moshe Rabbeinu told the 250 men, he said, meet me tomorrow morning and bring a pan with a ketores and a fire. But when he actually told them to do it, and you can look at it in yourself, he told them to only bring the pan and the ketores, not the fire. Here's the reason why. Gus and everyone looked over at Moshe Rabbeinu and said, you're killing everyone. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's all your fault that people are dying. Moshe Rabbeinu was like, oh, if they really think that I'm trying to kill people, then the 250 people is not going to go well. She told the 250 people, guys, stand back. Do not do anything. Don't do an avoda. Because if you do an avoda, you're going to die. So don't do anything at all. Do not bring a fire. The fire will come down from Shemayim. It will work on one person's korban, and the rest of you, one person's ketores, and the rest of you will see that he's the one chosen by God. And who is that person going to be? Aaron. Obviously, and that way nobody would die. But the people, they were not evil. They wanted so badly to bring the ketores. They wanted so badly to be makrive korbanos. They just want so badly. It wasn't because they're gaiva or anything like that or whatever. They just said, you're giving us an opportunity to bring the ketores and we're not going to take you up on it. How could we not do that? They were moser nefesh to put a fire in the ketores and burn it up to Shemayim even though they knew they were going to die. Who else did that? Nadav and Avihu. And they died the same way. Their bodies were not burned. The insides were burned. But their bodies remained intact. Just like Dust and Aviram. These people were Kadosh. And that's why their pans were able to be used later on as a tzipui lemizbeach, as a covering for the mizbeach. Because there were holy people that made a holy decision. Sure, there were chotim al nafshosim. They basically committed suicide. But they had a chance. It was like they with such a desire. We get to serve as something in the base of Mikdash. We had a chance before, and now you're telling us we can't? You gave us the chance. There's no way we're not going to take you up on it. There's no way. So that was a chait, but it was a chait in a very, very holy fashion. And that's the concept. That's why Aaron turned away from them and stood by Moshe Rabbeinu. He never brought a ketores. He never brought the ketores with the 250 men. Because the 250 men were not supposed to bring fire. When they brought fire, Aaron said, whoa, 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 that's not what you're supposed to do. I'm getting out of here. And he walked away, and they brought it with the fire itself. It was a huge desire. Do not think for a second that these people weren't kavush. And to put it honestly, and to put it mildly, Korach himself was obviously not also, Korach himself had to be a huge Jew. Don't think that Korach was so evil in and of himself. Even though it seems he had gaiva on whatever it was, there's obviously a lot of kedusha to him. I'm going to end with a story. The Baal HaTanya, his grandson was a Tzemach Tzedek. Okay, the Tzemach Tzedek was a tremendous Yid. Tzemach Tzedek used to be by the Baal HaTanya all the time. Okay, tremendous Yid. He was a little kid at the time. So the Baal HaTanya told the Tzemach Tzedek, he told his grandson, he had a certain sefer. And he said, you're not allowed to read the sefer. It's only Torah that deserves to be in Shemayim. It doesn't deserve to be on earth. And if you read this sefer, you're chayiv kares, and you're going to be killed very, very quickly. That's what he told the Tzemach Tzedek. So Tzemach Tzedek said, okay, dude, I'm out. I won't do anything, right? There was a fire in the Baal HaTanya's library, and that sefer was consumed in the fire. So Baal HaTanya, a few days later, called in the Tzemach Tzedek, said to the Tzemach Tzedek, tell me everything you remember from that sefer so I can rewrite it. Tell me everything you remember reading. So Tzemach Tzedek said, Rebbe, you told me I can't read it, or I'll chayiv kares. I said, I didn't read it. So Baal HaTanya said, you knew that it was that holy of a sefer, and you didn't read it? Where's the mesirat nefesh for Torah? That's what Baal HaTanya told the Tzemach Tzedek. I don't know where it is. I don't know what I would have done. But I just would have cried. What are you supposed to do in that? Have a good Shabbos, guys. We'll see you soon. The summary is Korach takes advantage of the people on the problem with Moshe. Moshe was the light of the menorah, Korach's riches. What happened to 250 men?